Hey everybody, welcome back to Explain Like I'm 5, the podcast where we take the questions you always wanted to ask and talk about them in a way that's easy to understand. We are your hosts, I'm Tim.
Hey everyone, I'm Kevin.
So Kevin, the topic for this week is matcha. It's a delightful green tea, but here's the first question. Is matcha Japanese or is it Chinese?
So matcha tea has quite a rich history. It originated in China and then developed in Japan. So today, it's mostly produced in Japan. The start of matcha actually dates all the way back to the Tang Dynasty in China, around the 7th to 10th centuries. And it was during this time that the tea leaves were steamed and formed into these bricks for storage and also trade. So the tea was prepared by roasting and pulverizing, you know, the tea leaves. In the 12th century at the latest, Chinese compressed tea, which is the raw material for matcha, was introduced to Japan. And when the introduction of compressed tea was banned in China in 1391, matcha was abandoned in China and then developed in Japan from then on.
So how is matcha different from other types of green tea, aside from, of course, that bright green color?
Oh, the main difference lies in the preparation and the cultivation process. Matcha is made from shade-grown tea leaves, which actually increases the chlorophyll content, and that's what gives it its vibrant green color. The leaves are then finely ground into a powder, which is whisked with hot water to create this very frothy and rich tea. Other green teas, on the other hand, are typically steeped, and then the leaves are discarded after brewing, which we might be familiar with.
So can you ELI-5 the process of how matcha is actually made then?
Sure. The process begins actually about 20 to 30 days before even harvesting, when the tea bushes are covered to prevent any direct sunlight. This is important because it slows down growth and it actually stimulates an increase in the chlorophyll levels, which then turns the leaves a darker shade of green and causes the production of like amino acids, in particular something called theanine. So only the finest tea buds are then hand-picked, and after harvesting, if the leaves are rolled out before drying, as in the production of sencha, the result will be something called gyokuro, actually, so jade dew tea. However, if the leaves are laid out flat to dry, they will crumble somewhat and actually become something known as tencha. And then tencha may be deveined, destemmed, and finally stone ground to the fine, bright green, talc-like powder we finally now know as matcha.
That is quite a process. And there are plenty of health benefits of drinking matcha as a result of that process you just described.
Exactly. That's why it's so popular. Matcha is packed with antioxidants, including the powerful EGCG. It also boosts metabolism and burns calories, you know, detoxifies pretty effectively and also naturally. It's known to calm the mind and relax the body. It's rich in so many things like fiber and chlorophyll and vitamins, and provides vitamin C and selenium and a whole bunch of other minerals, lowers cholesterol and even blood sugar.
Wow, that's a long list of benefits, so I can see why it's worthwhile drinking. Is that also why matcha ends up being more expensive than other types of tea?
Yeah, so it's a labor-intensive production process, like I mentioned, right? The production of everything from shading the tea plants, it requires a lot of skill and also a lot of time. And then finally, there's the whole grinding aspect of the tea into that fine powder, which is done using very traditional stone mills. And each mill can only produce about 40 grams of matcha an hour, which also, again, contributes to the high cost.
So matcha also tastes rather different to other teas.
Yeah, yeah. Matcha has this unique, rich flavor that's often described as umami, right? Which is a savory taste. It's smooth and creamy, with a slightly sweet aftertaste. The flavor can vary depending on the quality of the tea, of course, with higher quality matcha having a more complex flavor profile.
And then to the consumer, there's also a traditional way of preparing matcha. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, traditionally matcha is prepared by sifting the powder into a bowl and adding hot water, and then whisking it until it becomes frothy. And this whisking is done also with a very special bamboo whisk called a chasen.
And can you explain the significance of this matcha whisk, this chasen, and how to use it properly?
Yeah, so the matcha whisk or chasen, it's actually a pretty essential tool in the traditional preparation of matcha. it's used to mix the matcha powder with the water, and it creates this very frothy, very smooth tea. And to use it, you actually just simply whisk the tea in a zigzag motion until it's frothy. Mm. The chasen is also a symbol of the mindfulness and care that goes into the preparation of matcha.
I see. Now, I understand there's different qualities of matcha. How do you tell you're buying a high-quality matcha?
Oh, at a basic level, just simply look at the color. High-quality matcha will have a very vibrant green color and also a very fine and smooth texture. It should also have this, you know, fresh, grassy smell. If the matcha you get is dull or a little brownish in color, or maybe it has a coarse texture, it's likely not that high quality.
And aren't there different grades of matcha?
Oh, you better believe it. There are two main grades of matcha. There is the ceremonial grade and also a culinary grade. So ceremonial grade is the highest quality and is used in tea ceremonies and Buddhist temples. It's made from the youngest tea leaves with the stems and veins completely removed. And culinary grade matcha is made from, you know, maybe slightly older tea leaves and is also can be used in cooking and baking. It's still very high quality, but just has a slightly less delicate flavor.
And matcha has ended up being used in many different drinks and recipes. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about those.
Oh, it's incredibly versatile. I just had a matcha cake yesterday. It can be used in all sorts of recipes. So some of the most popular options include things like a matcha latte, a matcha smoothie or ice cream, and even matcha pancakes. It could also definitely be used in baking to add that unique flavor and color also to, you know, everything from cookies and cakes to other treats.
And a final question to end, how does the caffeine content in matcha compare to that in other caffeinated drinks?
Matcha does contain caffeine, but it's less than coffee. A typical serving of matcha contains around 70 milligrams of caffeine compared to around 95 milligrams in a cup of coffee. However, matcha also contains a compound called L-theanine, which promotes relaxation without drowsiness. And this can create a very calm and focused energy without the jitters or crash that's often associated with caffeine.
Very interesting. Thanks, Kevin. Did you learn something new? If you did, send us an email. We are at eli5thepodcast@gmail.com. We love hearing from you, especially when you've got comments and suggestions for us. As always, if you are a regular listener of this podcast, please do take the time to leave us a rating on Apple iTunes. It only takes less than a minute, and it really helps other people to discover our podcast, so we really appreciate it. Thank you to the community at r/explainlikeim5, and we will see you all next week. We'd like to make sure our listeners know about the Kevin Rose Show, a podcast that we are both huge fans of.
The Kevin Rose Show offers a unique blend of some pretty non-conventional wisdom, some tactical life and health hacks, some finance tips, and even a bunch of entrepreneurial advice.
Some of you may know Kevin Rose as the entrepreneur who founded Digg, but what I love about Kevin is that he is always predicting the future.
Man, he was already talking about Bitcoin way back in 2011, 2012.
Kevin has had some great guests on his show, like Andrew Huberman, Chris Dixon, Elon Musk, Tony Robbins, Chris Voss, and Tim Ferriss.
He even had the Wealthfront founder, Andy Ratcliffe, on the show. And I know a lot of Eli 5 listeners are really interested in investing and economics.
And then there's a recent episode with Casey Means on metabolism that is a must listen.
So go check it out, and you'll see why we're both such huge fans. Search The Kevin Rose Show on your favorite podcast app.